Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool radio program. It is the dawn of a new era here for our radio show. Welcome again. It is Saturday evening, March 21st, and we kick off a brand new game here on the Liberty News Radio Network. I am James Edwards. We're coming to you live tonight from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. And joining me in studio tonight is my good friend and colleague, Bill Rowland. Bill, how's it feel to be broadcasting during daylight hours?
Well, you know, I'm much more energetic. I've got much more energy. I feel pumped. I guess I should say that. That would, I think, adequately describe my mood. And I literally am getting my feet wet because, as I told you earlier, James, I was involved in a car accident this afternoon and actually dumped my car into a creek loaded with people. But by the grace and mercy of God, who is with us at all times, I cut out without a scratch, nobody injured, nothing but a completely wrecked car. So I'm grateful for the day because of, God being with me during that. But it is a pleasure and an honor to be on Liberty Radio Network, and we hope that we will better serve our listeners and everybody and expand our show to new markets. So we welcome all our listeners to this show. If you're a first-time listener, we certainly appreciate you turning in, and we hope we meet your expectations.
Not just meet them, but exceed them. And I think that's what we've tried to do for the last 4.5 years. This show certainly has a very storied history, which has been well documented. We're not going to get into that tonight. But all that being said, it's great to be here on Liberty News Radio Network tonight as we start our run with the team here. And, Bill, we've got a great show tonight. Of course, we believe that every show in the political cesspool is a great one, including last week's show where we were joined by Representative Charles Key out of Oklahoma, a man who not only sponsored the state sovereignty resolution in Oklahoma, but was, in fact, the author of it and the trailblazer who set the fire there in Oklahoma that has now spread to a lot of other states. Check our broadcast archives to catch that show and all of the great guests that we've had over the course of the last 4.5 years. I think you will be entertained. That being said, enough about the past. Let's talk about the present and the future. Good show tonight. Sam Dixon and Reverend Ted Pike will be on the show. And we've got some great guests coming up for the rest of the month. And heading into April, oh, man, you don't even know. But stay tuned and we'll let you know. That being said, Bill, I have been following the news, a lot of news taking place this week, tabloid style. And normally when we do these rapid fire segments, they're few and far between because we're normally a little more methodical and meticulous about what we talk about on this show. But there's just so much going on. We're going to have to try to cram it in. So you ready to buckle up and hold on tight, Bill? You think you can keep up with me tonight?
I've got on my helmet. I'm ready for a crash dive.
Okay. Well, let's start out in California. Of course, you've probably read by now, Nancy Pelosi says that immigration raids are, quote unquote, un-American, I should say. And you can read about this at our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, where we document all of the stories that we bring to your attention on the air. But in case you didn't already know, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi recently told a group of both legal and illegal immigrants that and their families, that enforcement of existing immigration laws as currently practiced is, quote-unquote, un-American. The speaker, condemning raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, referred to the immigrants she was addressing as patriotic. Not just patriotic, Bill, but very, very patriotic. She went on to say, and I quote, "Who in this country would not want to change a policy of kicking in doors in the middle of the night and sending a parent away from their families?" Pelosi told a mostly Hispanic gathering at St. Anthony's Church in San Francisco. Now, Bill, before you chime in on that, I just want to remind for all those delusional Republicans out there who think things would have been any different under a McCain administration, you can also go, and in our blog I have provided for you a blast from the past where Sarah Palin said pretty much the same thing, calling deportation of any illegal aliens inhumane. Bill, your thoughts on Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I don't really have any good thoughts on Nancy Pelosi, of course, but the left always uses language very carefully. They pick their words very carefully, and I know that one other opponent of cracking down on illegal immigration said that kicking out immigrants would be inhumane. Well, see, it's unpatriotic, it's un-American to kick out invaders. And so I guess we should have just opened our arms to the Japanese and the Nazis. They were just trying to get over here and partake of the American dream and share the wealth. Why haven't we welcomed all invaders? These people are invaders. They're invading our country. They're stealing citizenship. They're stealing the wealth of this country, what's left of it. We simply, American citizens, can't afford to support criminals. And the minute they cross the border without documentation, they are criminals. And, of course, as we have talked about before on the show, if the reverse was true, if I tried to sneak into Mexico and under the cover of darkness, I would either be shot dead by someone from the drug cartel, or I'd be arrested and hauled in for violating Mexico's border. This isn't a two-way street. This is a one-way street into big, fat America for these worms to eat away what's left of us. And, you know, we can't afford it anymore. The person who is un-American is Nancy Pelosi. She's thoroughly un-American because she doesn't care anything about Americans. She only cares about the people invading America, the people who are trying to suck the last drop of blood out of this country. So she's un-American, she's unpatriotic, and she's inhumane as far as her own constituents are concerned. The worst state for all of this sort of exploitation by the illegal immigrant, the illegal alien invasion is California. And apparently she seems to think that these people are going to turn out, steal our votes, steal citizenship, and vote her back into office. But that's not going to happen. They want California to be a province of Mexico. And so Nancy Pelosi is not buying any time. She's not buying any goodwill. She's making a fool out of herself.
Very well put, Bill. I don't think I could add anything to that, except to say another thing that makes the story increasingly grotesque is the fact that all of this took place in a church. And we're not going to chase that rabbit right now. We've lamented the fact that a lot of the Christian churches are now getting in bed with the politically correct and leftist causes as well. And Bill, as you know, every one of the hosting staff on this program is a Christian. But that is something that is a big pet peeve of mine, the fact that St. Anthony's Church would host this traitor and then allow her in their confines to say things so repugnant. Now, we'll talk about that later. But while we're in California, and before we go to our first break, Filipino teachers in Los Angeles have gotten a cultural shock after they encountered the real America. School boards across the country, Bill, as you may or may not know, I'm sure you know, are importing thousands of teachers from the Philippines to meet alleged teacher shortages. Many of them, of course, come here with stars in their eyes, especially those going to California after years of watching Hollywood movies about the golden promised land. They find out what life in a diverse American city and school is really like after getting here. And I read now from a story. Filipino exchange teacher Ferdinand Nakila landed in Los Angeles expecting pretty woman scenes of swank Beverly Hills boulevards and glittering celebrities. What he got was Inglewood, where he stayed for 2 weeks in temporary housing and encountered drunkards, beggars, trash-filled streets, and nightly police sirens. It got worse. In training sessions about American classrooms he received in the Philippines, he was told his students might not be quite as polite and respectful as those in his homeland. Nothing, however, prepared him for the furious brawl that broke out in one of his Los Angeles classrooms, where two girls rolled around on the floor, clawing and scratching each other, while the other students jumped on the desks and cheered. That, my friend, is diversity in action. Am I right?
Absolutely. They're not embracing diversity. They're not embracing our multilingual, multicultural society as they should. It's their fault. It's their fault for not understanding that it is un-American to kick out people who invade our schools. And here they are coming over, stealing jobs from Americans. But they're not embracing diversity. They don't understand, and they need, obviously, they need sensitivity training. Do you think that's going to happen to Filipinos? Of course not. What's going to happen is that there's going to be some sort of I imagine the school board is going to get together and they're going to come up with some lame plan for everybody to love each other and understanding each other's cultures and that kind of nonsense. But more importantly, this is a glimpse into the hidden race war that's going on in this country. And it's the hidden race war between Hispanics and blacks, between African blacks and American blacks, between people of different cultures and different races who don't like each other when they get into these public schools. And, of course, the media very deliberately and very carefully conceals this hidden race war. But you can be assured that, you know, a news story like Jenna, which involved no fights except the white boy that got his brains beat out in the school.
Hey, Bill, Bill, set tight. We're about to have to go to break. We're going to let you pick it up right after that when we return. And Pat Buchanan, when he was last on this show, talked about a book he's going to be writing, which documents this very race war that you're now mentioning. We're going to pick it up when the Cesspool returns right after this on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood, baby. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
How about that, everybody? All new bump-ins and bump-outs for our spot breaks, courtesy of Art Frith, and he even put in a little Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons for me. New phone number, new clock. It's all new tonight, Bill, and it feels so good.
It does, yes.
And we're back in the Political Cesspool. James Edwards, Bill Rowland here with you for our Liberty News Radio debut, and we're having a good time so far. A lot more to come. Bill, you were making a comment on that Filipino story, the cultural insurrection, as it were, and you were commenting on something that Pat Buchanan touched on, as I said, on this very program. Perhaps a coming race war if the politically correct dogma doesn't change itself. And one thing that all of the minorities do have in common, they might have some discrepancies with one another, but they all have a great amount of disrespect for European Americans.
There's an anti-white agenda, and of course, all the minorities benefit from attacking whites because whites will surrender as soon as the first shot is fired. There is no corporation or group in this country that stands up and says, "You should not attack us. That's racist. That's bigoted." To attack European Americans, we are open season all year long. It's open season on us. However, the secret race war is in the schools. This is where the real hatred and the real animosity and aggression between different cultures, different races, different people is becoming exposed. It proves the failure of multiculturalism. If these diverse brown and yellow people can't get along with each other, why should we be, as white Americans, the scapegoats for all the racial problems in this country? And this race war is taking place in the schools first, and it will carry over into the streets eventually.
Well, Bill, it's carrying over everywhere, as you know, and as every honest American will certainly realize. They continue unabated to attack our cultural heritage, our heroes. You may have just noticed over the course of the last week, St. Patrick himself came under attack. There's a great movement afoot because, of course, St. Patrick's Day was devoted to a Christian saint. That is hateful and offensive. You can now guess who's leading the campaign to destroy yet another aspect of our white Christian heritage, and it's the Disney Corporation. They're wanting to change St. Patrick's Day for it to be ever known this point forward as Shamrock Day.
Well, that's what we need, is a holiday named after grass instead of after a saint recognized throughout Ireland as the patron saint of Ireland. Well, the shamrock is just, of course, an emblem for Ireland. I mean, that's like celebrating two sticks tied together as Christianity instead of saying that the cross is a symbol of our religion, you know, or some other symbol being taking the place of the substance of the holiday, winter holiday for Christmas, and things like that. The happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, same thing. It's the point is to rob us of any sort of contact or affiliation with our own heritage. And I hope that the Irish, as an indigenous or a separate, rather, ethnic group, will stand up to this and say, no, it's St. Patrick's Day. If you don't like it, stay at home and drink green beer or something, or tequila or whatever it is you drink, and stay out of our parade. Don't rain on our parade. This is St. Patrick's Day. So far, I haven't heard that from the Irish, but I hope that they make a big stink out of it, because it might be a turning point as far as these renaming holidays and renaming occasions to suit the politically correct and the anti-white mentality out there.
Well, you know, there's a a line in Gone with the Wind where he says, when they turn and fight again, I'm going to stand and fight with them. Hopefully, at some point, before we walk off the stage of history, as ethnic people, our people will turn and try to preserve what's ours in our countries as we continue to trade down. But, you know, this false religion of political correctness has certainly manifested itself everywhere. There's an Obama ice cream ad, Bill, in Russia. As trivial as this may sound, it just goes to show that nothing slips under the radar of cultural Marxism. They said that the ice cream ad depicting Obama is racist. Of course, it's well known that when it comes to talking about ice cream, Russia has long been the nation of cowards. But they finally made a breakthrough, and they get called a racist for it. Basically, what you have here, and again, you'll have to go to our blog to see the picture. I'll illustrate it in words the best I can. It has a picture of Barack Obama standing in front of the White House. The caption reads, "Chocolate and vanilla, the flavor of the week, black and white." And it's for one of these Mickey Mouse bar type things, chocolate on the inside, vanilla on the inside, chocolate covering on the outside. But some people probably are having a hard time understanding just what's racist about this ad. But that's only because, Bill, they haven't been paying attention to the meaning of the word. The word racist has evolved over the years. The ad in this instance is racist because it was created by white people, the Russians. If this was an ad for a Kenyan ice cream, no one would be raising an eyebrow. But because white people made the ad to sell a white-owned ice cream product to people, it's racist. Just like in another story also this week, there was a white kid who said that Obama was his hero and he was celebrating his hero by wearing a mask of Obama. Well, he was reprimanded by his school because that was racist. But yet, in a similar incident, black children have been caught wearing the ads, and it's not racist. But go figure, right, Bill? I mean, this is just, it's silly, but it's also very serious. I mean, this ice cream company will probably have to issue an apology or pay sanctions.
Of course, have you ever noticed that these attacks are mainly against anybody that's got money? Anybody that's got money is brought under brought into the crosshairs of black empowerment groups like the NAACP. And I guess you probably mentioned this on a previous show, but Benjamin Jealous, the new director of the NAACP, is going after the banks that failed, Wells Fargo in particular, that failed to make almost interest-free loans to black mortgage customers. And, of course, the first thing out of his mouth, he let it slip. He goes, well, we're going after something that we can get our hands on. And I think that was a slip that he's going to have a hard time explaining, because what he means, of course, is money. And he quickly corrected himself. I mean, we're not talking about compensation. We're just talking about make things right. He's talking about compensation. He's talking about a shakedown. And that's what's really going on here. If these companies didn't have money, if there was no money involved, they wouldn't be interested in what anybody has to say. As long as there's money involved, they're going to try to work the guilt trip into cash.
Well, Bill, since you brought up the NAACP and since we are in the middle of the basketball tournament, do you know if the Tigers won an NAACP tournament today?
The NAACP tournament? Well, I'm not sure. I know we're number three in the NCAA, or number two, number three. So I haven't been watching basketball because I'm in God's country in an undisclosed location in the South. And I can tell you it's pretty much an all-white area and delightful, safe, and beautiful.
That's not the kind of
diversity.
I guess
that makes me a racist.
That y'all don't get to your friends there aren't experiencing the joys of diversity today, are they?
That's right.
Well, they're deprived. Speaking of Obama, though, in all seriousness, getting back on track here, he went on Jay Leno. Did you catch that?
No.
I'm not sure, but has a sitting president ever appeared on a late night talk show? I know Bill Clinton played the saxophone a few times while he was running, but is this common for a president to appear on a comedy show? And
Nixon did it,
okay.
And when he was desperate, I think, Nixon would go on television. I don't know whether Reagan did or Carter. I don't believe so. But certainly I think Obama is showing signs of desperation for his inability to win over the banks and Wall Street to his economic plan. And why should he win them over? It's a socialist plan. It's a plan for redistribution of wealth. and whatever else Wall Street is, whatever tool of the devil they are or can be, they certainly aren't going to hand their wealth over to anybody to be redistributed to ne'er-do-wells and deadbeats.
Bill, sit tight. Time for another break. It's that magic time again. We're going to come back and talk more about Barack Obama's experience on Jay Leno and his economic plan, or what is it? We'll find out. We'll make sense of it when the political cesspool returns with James and Bill. Sit tight, everybody.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Thank you, Art Frith, our program announcer. And we are going to take calls here during the third hour of tonight's broadcast. Still getting our feet wet with this new clock, and I think things are going we are transitioning ahead of schedule, Bill. I'm like the old dog. You can't teach new tricks. So I take any change a little hesitantly, but I think it's going absolutely smashing tonight. And by the way, Bill, during that commercial break, I was on the horn with Art, and Art said that Nixon did appear on Laugh-In, but he thinks that that was before he was in office. This appearance on Leno by Obama was the first ever on that sort of show by a sitting president. We're still getting confirmation on that. And by the way, Memphis did win today, unfortunately. Now, while he was on Jay Leno, though, Bill, Obama apparently made a politically correct faux pas. Even God himself can make a mistake in anger, the gods of political correctness. Towards the end of his approximately 40-minute appearance, Obama talked about how he had gotten better at bowling and has been practicing in the White House bowling alley. He said he bowled a 129. And went on to say that him bowling is something like the Special Olympics, which, of course, angered all of the, well, retarded or
the special people.
Right, whatever you know, we're supposed to call those people today. And I don't say that in jest, and I'm not trying to make light of a bad situation. I just don't know what the politically correct phrase for that is now. But nevertheless, he caught guff from that, from the Special Olympic members themselves, and in fact was challenged by one mentally handicapped black person to a bowling match. So it's in the news. What can I say?
Well, I think anybody in the Special Olympics could bowl better than a 129. I think probably it was an accurate comparison. And I would hope that that if he enters the – I think he belongs in the Special Olympics, as a matter of fact, as a bowler. Certainly, he would probably have a better score than he does as an economist.
Well,
so
I was going to say, now, I don't know if, you know, I don't know, Bill. Maybe, I would imagine that anyone in the Special Olympics could come up with a better economic or foreign policy than Obama. But, you know, whether or not they could beat him at bowling, we'll have to see.
I think he should take up the challenge and bowl in the Special Olympics. I think it'll set a new standard for the American presidency.
I tell you, a lot of precedents have been set since he's been in office, I promise you. But, all right, let's move over to Raleigh, North Carolina. Of course, Bill, you homeschool your children. I am a product myself of homeschooling, so it came as a little bit of regrettable news when I found out that in Raleigh, North Carolina, a judge has ordered a homeschooling mom to send her kids to public school. Now, this isn't just a deadbeat mom who is not educating her kids. They go out and they're vagrant and truant. The judge admits the kids are thriving with homeschooling, but nevertheless ordered the mother to stop homeschooling them. The kids all test out at a full 2 grade levels above average. This order came because of a divorce dispute. But I look for more of this kind of thing coming down the road, because liberals aren't going to allow homeschooling forever. Eventually, homeschooling is going to have a head-on collision with America's alleged love with diversity. If diversity is all, you know, if it's as important as everyone swears it is, and if segregated schools are evil, it's hard to understand how homeschooling can be a good thing. But, Bill, what's your take on this order?
This show, The Political Cesspool, we've been on record for a long time saying that Obama would open a full-scale assault on homeschooling. And this is one of the first phases of that. Now, I read particulars of this case, and clearly the father is involved, and the father has addressed the court about this, and it is his belief the children would be better off in the public school. So it's really a marital dispute or a divorce dispute. But you can see quite clearly how the media is playing this as what's best for the children, according to the judge, according to the state, according to the government. And despite the fact that this is really a marital dispute and something that should be resolved between the mother and father, have you noticed that nothing has been said about what the children think in this case? This is an important, I think, aspect of this concern over the children that the government is often playing to the public. And that is that in almost all cases where a child is abused or neglected or there's some real endangerment of the child or something where the child has a voice, they ask the children, what do you want to do? What do you think of mommy and daddy? Or why? What happened to you? Nothing about what the children want, only about what the government wants and what the parents should do. So my guess would be the children don't want to go to public school. They want to remain homeschooled, and that the government is simply going to intrude in on what is a domestic issue between the mother and father and demand that the government take action, step between the parents, jerk the children, and stick them in a nice, safe public institution where there are race wars going on. That's what the government wants. They want the complete deconstruction of our people, and you can be sure, too, that this is a white couple with white children, and get them back in the system where they can be trained up right as good world citizens and as multicultural standard bearers for the government. And that's really what this is about. It's about the breakdown and the gradual erosion of homeschooling. And I hope that there's a lawyer in North Carolina who will stand up to this and take this case on as an anti-homeschooling campaign, really, because this is where it's going to start.
Homeschooling, in my opinion, and I think this would be agreed by you, Bill, certainly produces the highest caliber of students, and followed by private schools. Of course, you have to have $10,000 a year to get into a good one of those. And, you know, to put a kid in a public school is almost, I think, abuse. It's like the black hole of Calcutta. But, you know, those private schools and church schools aren't that much better anymore, at least over the course of the last few years they haven't been. And they all, it's surprising that they would so wholeheartedly embrace the politically correct dogma of multiculturalism, because they would not even be in business if it wasn't for forced busing. I mean, we know that. They all came into being in 1974. But, you know, even these Christian schools, Bill, nowadays, I tell you, they leave a lot to be desired. And you've got people. This was absolutely, I don't mean to change the subject, but I got to bring this up while it's on my mind, because this is what I'm talking about when you come to, I don't want to say mainstream Christianity, but certainly establishment Christianity, or at least what the media would want you to believe Christianity represents today. Did you see where Cal Thomas compared Bernard Madoff to Jesus Christ? I mean, did you see that?
Well, it was a left-handed comparison, but clearly I think it definitely shows that Cal Thomas's mind is out of joint, you know, that he's got some loose circuits up there. To put any comparison between a swindler like Bernie Madoff and Jesus Christ, where is his mind in this? You know, when was Jesus Christ ever a swindler and a usurer and a someone who stole money and for his own enrichment? Cal Thomas is another one whose Christianity has been so warped by Judeo-Christian influences and by the view that really that Judaism can do no wrong and we should only submit as Christians to do Judaic thinking. And I think that's really what's going on here, is that, you know, why can't there be a Jewish villain? He stole most of his money from Jews. He bankrupted Jews and Jewish organizations, and Cal Thomas is trying to compare him to Jesus, or even some tiny thread of comparison to Jesus. He is, I mean, it just shows how utterly poisoned his mind is with the Judeo-Christian ethic.
Well, and that's the thing about it, because in modern-day Christianity or in establishment Christianity, you can't criticize anything Jewish. So that was the conundrum Cal was faced with, believing that as a Christian he's forbidden to say anything bad about anybody that's Jewish. And what he said, if people are a little fuzzy on this, if they haven't been to our website and read it for themselves or didn't see it in the news, I'm reading, this is Cal Thomas in his own words, and I quote, "Here's the dirty secret about the Madoff tragedy. Madoff is us. Yes, he is. Don't shut down your computer in disgust. We are all potential members of Swindler's List."
Do you know why our gut reaction? Why didn't Cal Thomas compare Bernie Madoff to Martin Luther King then? Why didn't he compare him to another swindler and liar and cheat and fraud instead of Jesus Christ? Well, I don't think he's going to compare him to Jesus Christ because in his mind, Jesus Christ really is holy. And I mean, Martin Luther King really is a sacred and holy and untouchable. Whereas, obviously, you can drag Jesus through the mud anytime now, even if you're a Christian, because, you know, Jesus forgives everything. But let's see Cal Thomas compare Bernie Madoff to Martin Luther King a more accurate comparison.
What he said was Madoff mirrors the flaws in each of us. We have crucified people who exposed our darkness to the light, and that was where the comparison was drawn. And you can read more about it at our site, folks. That's just one of those stories. It's just sick, you know, because these are the mainstream talking heads that give real Christianity and real paleoconservatives, you know the word I'm looking for, Bill. We're coming up to break. They give our movement a bad name. They give our movement a bad name, and then you got all these slack-jawed folks that watch Fox News. These are not conservatives, and if they are, they are really being led astray and following the wrong
right.
We'll be back right after this.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And why don't we just go ahead and do that? Let's go ahead and open up the floodgates. I feel comfortable enough in this new setup. Give us a call here live on the political cesspool this evening, this Saturday, March 21st, James Edwards, Bill Rowland here with you on the Liberty News Radio Network. And, Bill, I want to go from one neoconservative to the other. You know, it's been no secret on this program. I think we all share, as much as we disdain a fire-breathing communist, I think an equal amount of disdain we've invested in the neoconservative Republican Party. And the traitors we have in there, at least you know where the communists are coming from. These people are trying to do the exact same things, but they don't get called for it because they claim to be conservative. So we go from Cal Thomas to Joe the Plumber. Now, people, I know everyone's been wondering what Joe the Plumber has been doing since the election. Have you been wondering that, Bill? You just lay in bed at night wondering, don't you?
I stay awake at night, staring at the ceiling, wondering where he is now. And still waiting for my autographed picture.
Well, I'm about to tell you where he is now. I can't help you on the picture. It would appear as though his 15 minutes of fame are just about up. He's gone from unknown blue-collar worker to internet sensation to political pundit to quote-unquote author to quote-unquote war correspondent. And no matter how much he shielded for the neocons by calling for America to nuke Iran on behalf of Israel, and no matter how hard the neocons try to turn him into a conservative action hero by inviting him to speak at conference after conference, he never really caught on with anyone outside of the Fox News crowd. And he has a new book out, Bill, and I know you like to read a lot, so you might want to go to Borders or Barnes & Noble, but it doesn't appear to be selling very well. We got a picture of Joe up on our website. It looks about three people attended his book signing. The event was scheduled to last 3 hours, but ended after 55 minutes with Joe having sold a total of 5 books. Now, honestly, you're probably wondering why I'm talking about Joe the Plumber tonight. And there is actually a reason above and beyond the trivia of all that knowledge. A non-white showed up at his book signing, Bill, to rant about the evil white man, of course, and to point out that the white man's days are numbered because black and brown people will soon be a majority in America. And this attendee of Joe the Plumber's book signing makes it quite clear that he hates white people and that he views politics and everything else through the lens of race. If it's good for white people, it's bad. If it's good for non-white people, it's good. And I read now directly from the story that appeared in the newspaper. The only heat generated by Joe's appearance last night came when a young man named Jabari Zakia recounted great moments in American racism, slavery, annihilation of Native Americans, segregation, etc., etc., and asked Joe the Plumber if the hegemony of the white man in America is doomed now that five states and the District of Columbia have majority-minority populations. And so, Joe was delighted, ended up being delighted when this brown-skinned man started ranting about white racism and gloating that whites were about to lose their majority status. Here was his reply, Bill. You know, finally, though, you know, he would have had a chance. He would have had a chance to set a real live liberal straight. But instead, he began repeating the Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck talking points and boasted, in fact, that he loved immigrants because God knows he's not a racist. And here's what he said. Joe replied that he believes our American heritage is being torn apart by flag burners, critics of the military, and those who mock Christian values. He expressed, Bill, his admiration for patriotic immigrants and said he dislikes terms like African-American because we're all Americans, he said. And for some reason, he concluded by saying America has always been a kick-butt, take-names type of country. But these are the people the Republican Party are fronting as their standard bearers, Bill. And what do you mean? You know, this is the kind of response you would get from any Republican elected official, and it is absolutely, absolutely suicidal.
I think he needs to marry Sarah Palin's daughter and restore some honor to that family and stop talking about what Americans ought to be. I mean, if he wants to start with somebody who needs legitimacy, he needs to start with Sarah Palin's daughter. I don't care if that sounds ugly, because I'm so tired of this game playing by the Republicans to get people's sympathy and to get their attention and to try to win over converts to their big tent mentality. You know what's in a big tent? A circus. And that's what they're putting on, a circus to try to win over people of color. And, of course, I would be surprised if this was a setup. I wouldn't be surprised if it was an orchestrated event, just like the nomination and the appointment of Michael Steele as the head of the party. It's just a sideshow. And, of course, it's going to fail. And, you know, the thing is that at least when the Democrats fail, they fail and make themselves look stupid, but no more. When the Republicans fail, they make themselves fail and disgrace themselves. And that's what's going on here. He's just disgracing. Do you think this guy's going to go out and nod his head and now vote for a Republican candidate?
Well, that's apparently exactly what they think. Either they are so misguided that they believe that, or they are purposefully trying to implode the party from within. And who's to say? I mean, McCain was the worst candidate, and they had a lot of bad ones. They only had one good one, Ron Paul. McCain was about the worst. He and Giuliani, maybe neck and neck, and they nominated him. Then they give the chairmanship of the party to an affirmative action flunky who we have been railing on for weeks on this show, Michael Steele. My God, what a joke. Bill, we've talked about it much too much. We're not going to get back into that. Then you got Joe the Plumber. He's their, you know, extra political talking head. And then, you know, there's even this 14-year-old kid who wrote a book. We talked about this on the show last week. 14-year-old kid writes a book, says he was compelled to join the conservative cause because of his great respect for Bill Buckley. Or it's Bill Bennett, excuse me. And now Republican candidates are seeking the counsel of this 14-year-old. But back to Joe the Plumber. If he were halfway bright after hearing this, you know, pretty much canned rant from a guy like this, you'd think that the foreigner's speech would have pulled him up a little short, that it might have dawned on Joe the Plumber ever so slightly that importing tens of millions of people who look and think like this guy might not really be the smartest thing to do, that maybe, just maybe, Joe the Plumber would have started tugging at the mental and moral straitjacket that Hannity and Limbaugh have wrapped around his mind, that he might have gotten a glimmer of understanding of the truth about racial differences and just how ill that bodes for America's future. But, all he did was start spouting that ditto-head gibberish again. And I tell you, this is not just a problem with Joe the Plumber. This is, as I say again, the Republican mentality from top to bottom with anyone in that party that's making any decisions right now.
The Republican Party needs to appoint SpongeBob SquarePants as the new chairman because he's not white, he has no backbone, and he's porous. He absorbs anything that's thrown at him, and no matter how bad it is. And so they need some sort of character to run the party who really represents them, and I think that's SpongeBob SquarePants. He's not white, he's porous, and he has no backbone.
It's
a joke.
They are a joke. And you know, it doesn't really cause me any pleasure to have to realize this, because God knows the Democrats are just as bad. I'm not going to say the Democrats are any worse, because I don't think that they are. I think that they're both opposite sides of the same coin. You use your cliche there. The new boss is the same as the old boss. They're both having their strings pulled by the same puppet master. But nevertheless, a lot of working class conservative folks believe that they are the lesser of two evils, or at least marginally a conservative alternative to the Democratic Party, and they are not. And as long as people still continue to believe that they are some sort of resistance to the Democrats, then these people are going to remain in bondage and in servitude to this party, who is doing everything they can to sell them down the river into this godless new world order. I mean, the Republican Party couldn't care less about their base. They try to pander to everyone except for the people who actually vote Republican. And it continues to make no sense to me.
Well, clearly the Democrats, as Obama has demonstrated, are the party of the Special Olympics. And, of course, the Republicans, as I say, I think they're the cartoon party. They are two-dimensional and have absolutely nothing to offer real conservatives. And I think the next election, one thing is you're going to see is a breakup of the solid South as far as voting Republican. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the South is going to split along certain lines, and some states are going to vote Republican, some states are going to vote Democrat. And the Republicans will have lost the stronghold that they had in the country politically, and that was the Solid South. So that's their loss, that they have deliberately alienated the very people who kept them in power year after year after year. And so good riddance to the Republican Party. Eventually the Democratic Party will go the same way. They will alienate everybody in America. And the problem with this is when our system fails, even if it's a two-party system, the alternative is going to be a tyranny. It's going to be a totalitarian government. All democratic governments that fail end up in the hands of ideologically convinced demagogues. And that's where we're going right now. We're heading towards the control of our government by a handful of people who simply say, we've got the power to control you, therefore we control you. You've elected idiots, and so you deserve
Bill,
what you get.
Bill, got to go to break. I just don't see how the Republicans are ever going to compete again on a national level. It just maybe they don't want to. Irregardless, we know where they're going, and it's to the retirement home. We're going to take a break here on the political cesspool. We will be back with the second hour, if I untie my tongue, right after this. Sit.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the political cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.